Hi friends, this is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about the ins and outs of friendship. As I wrote about in my book, Messy, Beautiful Friendship, friendship isn't easy for anyone. It takes time, intentionality, and lots of grace. And sometimes we have to navigate complexities and hurts in friendship that leave us uncertain and crushed. I'm right there with you, and my guests are here to help us think through it all. Today, my guest on the podcast is Hannah Anderson. Hannah is a wife, a mom, and the author of several books, including Humble Roots, which is one of my favorite books and one I have reread, and I don't usually reread books. Hannah has a new book out called All That's Good, Recovering the Lost Art of Discernment. So I invited her on the show today to help us apply discernment to our relationships. Sometimes the messier parts of friendship aren't black and white, and we need a lot of help thinking through what to do when there is distance in a friendship, for example, or how to have wise conflict, and how to, as the Bible says, faithfully wound a friend when it's necessary. Hannah is going to help us with these things today, as well as how to think about loneliness and why she says if we're doing relationships correctly, it often involves heartbreak. Here, friends, is my conversation with Hannah Anderson. Thank you so much, Hannah, for joining me today on my podcast.
Oh, I'm so glad to be with you, Christine.
I just told you offline, I saved all the hard questions for you. We're going to dive into some really, really deep waters as far as friendship goes. But before we do that, I would love for you to introduce yourself. Tell us about your ministry context and your family.
Right. So I live in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, which is the area that my husband grew up in. And about 7 years ago, we moved back for him to become a pastor of a small country church here. So we have spent the last 7 years putting down roots. And for my husband and I, 7 years is the longest we've been in one place. But he's 40. I'm coming up on my 40th birthday. And so like 7 years, it's a reasonable amount of time. But for my children, it's almost their whole life.
Yeah.
And I didn't really recognize the fact that when we moved here, my youngest was 2. And so he's 9 now. It's my youngest. I have 3 children. And this area has been his whole life. The work we've been doing here in this church has been his waking memory. So I work here with my husband in the local church setting. We have 3 children. Our oldest is 14, a daughter, and then we have a son who is 12, and my youngest, as I mentioned, is 9. And so we're involved with just a lot of normal things that families with kids those ages are involved in. You know, school, sports, trying to find family time together. And just because we're not busy enough, I also write and speak as God give me opportunity. I travel to women's groups and usually teaching out of the books I've written. About 4 years ago, I released a book called Made for More, and God just opened up doors, brought it to me, really paved the way for me to write about women finding their identity as image bearers. And then about 2 years ago, he opened doors again for me to write about the topic of humility in context of accepting the limits in our life, the boundaries that God has placed on us, and that by embracing those boundaries, he will bring rest. Mm-hmm. And if listeners are familiar with that book, they'll know that a lot of the life that we lead here in Southwest Virginia was kind of embedded into talking about humility through garden imagery, through just living close to the earth here in the mountains like we do.
That is one of my favorite books, actually, Humble Roots. I love that book. I've read it a few times. I think it's a book that I'll pick up once a year and just read back through. But I love that it captures that small town feel. I can't remember the person's name who brings you the
Russ, the honey.
Yes, the honey. Yes, yes. And just, oh, I love how you write, but I also just love the imagery you used in that. It's such a great book. I highly recommend it to anybody who is listening. We actually live in Virginia too. We're right down the mountain range from you in central Virginia, Charlottesville. And so, and we moved here about 10 years ago. So I can relate to what you just said about my kids only know this place. They don't remember where we came from. And it's a little weird for me.
Mm. It is. It's hard because my youngest has really adopted this Virginia identity. And I don't know if you experience this where you are. And I hate to break it to listeners who are not Virginians, but there is a Virginia identity. And I guess maybe the only thing that it rivals is maybe a Texan identity.
Well, that's where we're from. So yes. Yeah.
But in Virginia, it is like you are a Virginian first. And then you're an American.
Mm.
And I've seen my kids kind of grow into that. And it's really interesting to me because my husband has that similar sense of self, but I didn't grow up in Virginia. So I'm like the, they all put up with me, you know, but they're really putting down roots and gaining a sense of themselves mm-hmm. within this community.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've written a new book and I am so excited to get to read it. It comes out in October. By the time this conversation airs, your book will be out. So I would love for you to tell us about your new book and why you wrote it.
Right. So October 2nd, Moody is going to, or will have released my next book called All That's Good, Recovering the Lost Art of Discernment. I found with the first two books I wrote, I did a lot of exploration of kind of the internal processes and our knowledge of self and kind of exploring the world with inside ourselves. And I wanted to kind of look at the other side of that coin to say, well, how do we explore the world around us? Mm. What posture, what paradigms, what kind of principles should be in our minds as we're moving through the world? So if we've kind of grasped a sense of ourselves in Christ, and now we're going to go about our lives and we're going to live in this world that He has created, what should our disposition be? And it's interesting because we live in the world that's been broken by the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it can be difficult to know what's good and what's not good. So there are things that God has created that are in the world that are good, and we are called to seek them out and to embrace them and enjoy them as His good gifts. But we also know that the world has been corrupted by sin. And I found that, very practically speaking, it's very hard to know which is which sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And because we don't know, we don't feel equipped, we don't always feel wise, sometimes we'll just withdraw. We'll just pull back entirely and not engage in the world around us because we don't know what's safe. But on the other hand, sometimes we can just embrace everything in the world without questioning. And so we will just say, well, it's there and it's good, and we don't even think about it. And so that's kind of where I began to really press into this concept of what is discernment? What would it look like to move through the world learning the difference between good and evil? And I really felt like for our time, we live in a time where there is so much information coming at us. We open our phones, we open our laptops, and in a matter of 5 minutes, we can encounter more information than our grandparents would in a lifetime.
Hmm.
So we're facing this highly connected world, this glut of information, and we don't always know how to process or sort through it. So I wanted to kind of just offer up some principles, go on a journey myself, to say, what are the core things that we need to be looking for? If we're seeking goodness, so we'll know the difference between what's good and what's not good, what are the things that we would need to be looking for to cultivate discernment? And ultimately, what we're looking for is the character of God. We're looking for things that reflect His truth. We're looking for things that reflect His glory, His justice, His beauty, His purity. And that led me to that classic passage in Philippians chapter 4, where Paul tells us, okay, you're in this world. Okay, don't be anxious. It's so interesting because the verses that he leads up to tell us to seek whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, lovely, and commendable. Think on these things. Right before that, he says, don't be anxious. Don't be anxious. You know, this world can be a scary place, but move into it seeking things that reflect the character and the nature of God. And you're going to be able to find goodness in it because God is still in control and he still is giving us his good gifts in this world.
Mm-hmm. That sounds so good. Truly, I cannot wait to read it. I'd love to talk about discernment and really and how it relates to relationships. And I'm sure that came up in your thinking as you're talking about navigating the world. Relationships is a huge component of that, and the people that we listen to and that we follow and interact with.
Right, because we receive information through relationships. It's not like we just have these libraries and these catalogs of books where it's all detached, but it comes to us through people, through an author, through a friend saying something, through a pastor. So we are saying things to each other all the time in all of our relationships. And so friendships, relationships are a very important part of learning how to navigate the world. And what's fascinating is if you look at the book of Proverbs, which also played a lot into the book of learning discernment, learning, moving from simplicity to wisdom, growing in our maturity and understanding of wisdom, that so much of what Proverbs has to say relates to who do you link your life to? What kind of people can you trust? What kind of people should you give a wide berth to? What kind of people should you stay away from? And all of it comes back to these questions of if you're going to find goodness in the world, if you're going to have a life that's full of God's glory and his goodness, then you're going to have to look for people who are reflecting his character. You're going to have to look for people and link your life to those people who are operating purely, mm-hmm. who are speaking truth, who are pursuing justice. And so, yeah, it's built into the book of Proverbs constantly. You read these verses over and over and over again about, like, make no friendship with an angry man, or the young man is warned against the adulterous, flattering woman. And we're actually warned against certain types of people and the characteristics and the actions that they display in their life that are not good.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us how that practically looks? Because I think a lot of times as Christians, we think we couldn't possibly draw lines between, we can in the world, we can say the world, there's a line there. We kind of get that as far as discernment goes. But when it comes to within the church or within relationships where it's not this overtly evil person, how do we practice discernment, and how do we kind of draw those practical lines in our lives?
Well, I think the first thing we have to understand is that the word friend or relationship covers a whole host of differing types of relationship. You know, we use the word friend someone on Facebook, but you know as well as I do that there's varying degrees of intimacy even within that word friend. And so when we talk about our relationships with people, we are talking about a level of proximity to them. So some people are acquaintances, some people are coworkers, some people are in our family, you know, some people are extended relatives, and no matter how much we infuriate each other, we're family. And so we're bound together in those ways. When I think of the word friend, I think of someone that you are intentionally bringing into your life, and you are creating intentional bonds between you and them. And, you know, C.S. Lewis talks about the definition of friendship being when you meet someone else and you see them and you say, what, you too? Where you find this commonality, some link that creates a relationship, but then you're also building into choosing that relationship and enforcing it. And one of the things I think when we define friendship that way, as the relationships that we choose for ourselves, not the ones that have been given to us, not the ones that we are maybe in neighbor relationships with, but the ones that we actually choose for ourselves and we say, I'm going to invest my time, I'm going to invest my heart, I'm going to invest my trust in this person. That's where we start saying, well, are we going the same direction? You know, can two walk together except they be agreed? And if you are on this path of seeking wisdom and seeking discernment, you're seeking goodness. You're looking for all that's true, all that's just, all that's honorable, all that's lovely, pure, commendable. You're not going to have friendships with people who aren't doing those same things. Because as you grow in that direction, if they're not coming along with you, there's going to be a natural attrition. There's going to be a natural kind of parting of the ways where you realize that your lives are not aligning as closely as they maybe did before you started on this path. That doesn't mean you're not in relationship with them. You're probably always going to be in relationship with them. But it's not a relationship where you are investing yourself and your trust and your future with them.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good and helpful definition of friendship, that there are different levels or different, maybe, I think of concentric circles, that the smaller circles are the friendship type relationships. So can you help us think through a distance in relationships? And I'm going to use the word friendship, meaning people who we've been close to, that we feel those relationships have shifted in some way and we're not quite sure what has happened. I get a lot of questions from women about this. Can you help us think through how do we discern in those situations when we haven't had outright conflict, but there feels to be some sort of distance that we can't put our finger on? How do we navigate that kind of situation?
Well, I think in my life experience, sometimes God is just taking your lives in different directions for no one's fault. You know, you go through different seasons at different times, and maybe your children were a link for you, but now your children aren't in the same spaces, or they're in different schools, and your lives just don't have that natural point of connection. And I think sometimes we underestimate the amount of, we underestimate the level at which our friendships are found in shared spaces. Mm-hmm. So we have this vision of friendship that is all emotional. It's a heart connection. And if we're truly friends with someone, then we will overcome any barriers to be with them, or we'll keep it, you know, as intimate as everything. But really, we are embodied people. We have limits on our space, on our time. And so often our friendships rise up and emerge from being in the same space and doing the same work and relating to each other every day. Like if I have children up at our elementary school and I drop them up and I pick them up every day, and there's another mom who does the same thing and I see her every day, there's a point of connection that's reinforcing the commonality. And as we build relationship around that and friendship even, it's going to change when our children are not in the same school. And I don't think that that is anything to feel like you failed. Mm-hmm. Because I also know I've moved away from friends a lot. Before we landed here, I moved like more times than I want to think about. And each time we've left parts of our hearts behind. But I guarantee you that if I pick up the phone, there are some friends that there's that immediate instant connection. We don't talk every day. We may not talk for months because our lives are just not in the same spaces. But the minute we do, it's there. So I guess that was a long answer to say, first, I'm not sure distance and a change in a friendship is necessarily a signal that there's a problem. Mm-hmm. So it may just be in God's providence that relationships are changing. However, if there isn't like a change in your context, if there isn't a change in your routine, everything's the same, but you just things are different than they were. I think pursuing truth and pursuing love means pressing into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And how would you say, how would you encourage women to think through how to do that?
Well, I think the first thing you would do well is you don't assume that the problem is the other person. So when you reach out to someone, you don't say, "Are you mad at me?" Because that automatically puts the weight on them, that if there's any distance, it's obviously that you've changed. Mm-hmm. I think humility, taking enough time to say, what have I done or what have I changed? So I would probably practically reach out to a friend and say, "Hey, I am so sorry I have not been in touch. I am so sorry that I have, you know, I missed this, or I missed your birthday, or I missed this. Let's get together." So I think a very practical thing is to take ownership on your end first. Don't assume it's them. Don't assume that something massive is wrong. Don't assume that they've been offended. You know, for all you know, they could have a lot of private worries or private concerns that are happening at home that they just don't feel like they can share publicly. And that could be distracting them and burdening them. And it has nothing to do with you at all. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's where humility comes in, where don't assume that the distance is because they are responding to something you've done or something about you. Just see the distance and say, "Well, I'm going to try to close that gap, and I'm going to take responsibility to close the gap, and I'm going to put myself out there, and I'm going to say, hey, I'm sorry I haven't been in touch lately. Would you like to get together? Would you like to?" And, you know, at that point, there's a lot of different things that, you know, a lot of different directions that can go. Mm-hmm. You know, someone may say, "Well, yeah, I'd love to do that. I've just been so busy and this is happening." And then maybe they'll open up about the other pressures that are happening. Or they may put you off. And then you may have a sense of, well, maybe it's something more than what I'm, you know. And I just think this is where the Holy Spirit is also faithful to guide us. Yes. You know, he doesn't give us the step-by-step plan, but he gives us the guiding principles. Mm-hmm. Seek love, seek truth, seek humility, you know, seek to operate by these virtues. And when you're in the situation and you need to make a decision, you'll have the wisdom you need to make that decision.
That's very good. I like how you mentioned too, getting together in person. I think sometimes having that in-person communication is really helpful in helping us to discern what is actually happening with the person, or that the distance maybe just was a circumstantial distance, mm-hmm. but not trying to do it over email or text. So much can be lost in that, but face-to-face interaction is so helpful. But let's talk about conflict, because sometimes we recognize that the distance is because we have hurt somebody. Or we maybe have distanced ourselves because we have felt hurt by someone. I feel like this is something that women, we do not talk about how to do conflict with one another. And we desperately need help thinking through that. A lot of times, at least for me personally, what I want to do is just walk away and just, well, that wasn't what I thought it was. I'm just going to kind of slink back and just pretend like nothing ever happened and we were never friends in the first place. And so I've had to learn how to have wise conflict.
Yes.
Can you speak to that?
Well, so depending on our cultural context that we grow up in, sometimes we're taught that avoiding conflict is the more spiritual route.
Yes.
Like we are taught that to be peacemakers means don't ruffle feathers, don't, you know, least said, soonest mended, that sort of popular wisdom. But what's interesting when you look into biblical wisdom, there are passages that, you know, even when Christ says, you know, if there's something between you and your brother, leave your gift at the altar and go immediately to find out what is between you. Figure this out. Proverbs has some passages that relate to that as well, that you will go find your friend. And if you have solidified that friendship, that you have won a great treasure. One of the words that Paul uses in Philippians 4, when he's saying whatever is true, whatever is just, one of the words he uses is the word commendable. And it's a funny word in English when it's translated that way in English, but at the Greek root, it is to say what is good or appropriate to a moment, to have the right words and to speak appropriately to the situation. Now, we would often think that that means speaking good in a good space or using the right language for a moment. But sometimes a moment calls for conflict. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a moment calls for confrontation. Now, that doesn't mean we do it in an aggressive or prideful way, but it does mean that if we walk away from a moment where we actually need to enter into it, we are not seeking whatever is commendable. We are not seeking to use our words in a way that they have been given to us to use. And in context of Paul's writing, he's speaking more about calling out the unfruitful works of darkness. He uses that language where the same word commendable is in that passage where he says, rebuke the unfruitful works of darkness. And we don't like to think of rebuke as part of friendship.
Yeah.
Or that would ever be part of our relationships. We think of relationships as always nice.
Yes. Yeah.
Always gentle.
Always easy.
Always, conciliatory,
yes.
You know. But sometimes in order to preserve a relationship, you have to rebuke what's happening in the midst of it. And while you're doing it, you're doing it for the purpose of saving the relationship. You're doing it for the purpose of saving and for the well-being of that other person. You're not doing it so you're right and they're wrong and you're proving a point. You're doing it for the goodness, for the common good, so that everyone can continue to exist well in this relationship and be in communion with each other. Mm-hmm. Because that's what sin does. Sin, it divides and it breaks communion and it breaks friendship. And so if we need to speak up, we have to recognize that that can be a healing thing. On the reverse, if we're the one who's in sin, we have to be ready to receive the rebuke. We have to be ready to hear what someone else says to us. And even if it's hurtful, to receive it with the humility, knowing that there is grace available and that it is actually an act of grace that we would have our eyes opened to our failures.
Mm-hmm. So for me, one of the main questions often I struggle with this, and faithful are the wounds of a friend. How can I discern when it is my God-given, it's His will for me that I go and I speak to my friend about something specific that I see? Because sometimes I think it's more of a waiting, and then sometimes it's a speaking. And so how have you learned to discern that?
Well, I honestly fall heavy on providence. So when I begin to see something that I need to speak about, I begin to pray first. I begin to pray to check my own heart. And so the first thing I pray about is, am I trying to say this because I'm angry? Mm-hmm. Am I saying this from a place of self-righteousness? Do I feel the need to say this from a place of fear? Because sometimes, there can be something that is true that God is giving us to say, but we are so imperfect and we are so racked with sin that we feel the burden to say it, but the burden is coming from a different place. It's coming from our place of needing to be vindicated or needing to have the truth established. And what we really mean is, I want to have my say. And that's very different than the way God establishes truth. So the first thing I do when I begin to sense that there is something I need to speak is I pray for my own heart and clarity about my own motives. And I automatically want to get, I want to get in this habit where my gut reaction is, Hannah, what's clouding this for you? And as I pray and God reveals places where I might be fearful and I might be acting out of angst, I might be acting out of anger, I'm also praying that if the message still remains a burden, that it will be refined and then I'll continue to step into it. It's like I don't step away from it because I'm angry. I just repent of my anger. And then the message is still intact. Then I begin to pray for the right timing. And I pray for the right opportunities. And it has been my experience that God in his sovereignty, he sets those up. So I do not feel this anxiety or pressure to force a conversation. And I am ready to speak when the moment comes. And so most of the time I find myself carrying around the message that I need to say, and I'm just waiting for the go from God. Because the other thing we have to recognize in his sovereignty is he is preparing the other person to hear the message he is giving. And if you jump that process, if you get in front of him, you can really derail what his ultimate goal is. And we have to remember that the goal is not to have said certain words. The goal is not to get the burden off your chest and just leave it on someone else. The goal in God calling you to speak is that there would be repentance and union. And it's not just about you needing to say something. So for me, I pray through that. And it often takes a lot longer than I feel comfortable with. I want the burden off of me.
Yeah,
I want to stop feeling the grief. I want to stop feeling the confusion. I want to stop feeling the anxiety of watching this person go down this road. And so in my selfishness, I want to just have it out and be done with it so I can go on with my life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes participating in the work God is doing means carrying burdens and suffering longer than we feel comfortable with. Yes. Until he prepares the right moments to say those things that need to be said.
So good, Hannah. I also think we have to be prepared to continue carrying the suffering of a friend not hearing the word, not responding well. And so has that happened for you where you have approached a friend and they have not received it as a loving wound?
It has, absolutely. Some of my closest, longest friendships have suffered through that. And one of the things that I had to learn right away was that in my obedience to God, it's not about me. Mm-hmm. So my job is to speak when God says speak. My job is to pray and to love. It is not my job to fix. And sometimes that means carrying massive amounts of grief and pain, knowing that you've done what you were called to do, knowing that you have spoken the words that were given to you, that you have spoken them in integrity, that you have spoken them at the right time. And so the boundary of knowing what you are responsible for and what you are not preserves your sanity even as you are carrying the grief.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of times in friendships, we see each other's projects and we want to fix each other as a way to save ourselves from heartbreak. And I'm not sure that God is interested as much in our saving our emotional heart, saving us from emotional heartbreak than he is in a healthy process playing out. And a healthy process means that the other person doesn't just do what we force them to do, but that they themselves come through this wrestling with God, that they come to a sense of themselves before him and move to health themselves.
Mm-hmm. That is so helpful. I know that's going to help a lot of people listening. I love that you brought up heartbreak, because I do think that if we're doing biblical friendship well, and we're interacting at that level with friends who are pressing us to know Christ and we're pressing them to know Christ, there is this great opportunity for heartbreak, and to, that sanctification process is painful at times. And I think for me, I even right now feel like I'm in this season of loneliness after experiencing great intimate friendships, and I still have them, but I feel that God is really, there's this sense of, I'm still experiencing it and working through it. So I don't know that I could give words to it necessarily, but there is a sense of this, of the loneliness of knowing that only God can meet my greatest need, and some, and fighting against that a little bit of, not wanting him to be the only one who can meet my need, wanting other people around me, because they're the physical people, it's quick. It's an instantaneous kind of fix. But I think that there is a sense of longing that friendship pulls out of us, because we recognize that we're in these imperfect relationships and we crave the perfection of only what Jesus can give. So I would love for you to speak to that, some of especially that idea of loneliness or heartbreak in relationships, and how can we look at that as a good thing sometimes?
Right. I think if you were, like you said, if you were doing relationships correctly, they will be the best and worst thing you ever experience at the same time.
So true.
And I think sometimes what happens in our church communities is that we are very content with superficial relationships because they save us the heartbreak.
Oh, that's so true.
So, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, we just go to church and we ask each other, how are you? And we all just have our pat answers. And I'm like, yes, because that's safe, because that keeps me from despair.
Yes.
So I understand why we limit the depth at which we enter within with people. It is a self-preservation mechanism. And I'm not saying that you go deep with everyone
right,
to the same degree. But I also think when we try to preserve ourselves from heartbreak, we also bypass the opportunity for God to heal us and for God to use that heartbreak for our own development and growth and dependence. And so even something like, you know, your most intimate relationships in your family, you know, whether it's marriage or parents, or these are spaces that can be full of heartbreak because we disappoint each other so regularly. And yet the depth of those relationships too. I had a friend, very, very close friends here in Virginia, and we just love them to bits. But we've talked about this. We've talked about the fact that the deeper we go in the relationship, the more potential there is for pain. And so we were talking about some kind of thing we might do together, some joint effort. And you know, my friend said, well, I just don't know. I don't want to ruin the relationship we already have by going into this project together. And I said to her, I said, well, if that were the basis of whether we proceed into relationships, no one would ever get married, because here's a joint project of family. Here's a joint project of marriage. And you take on that risk of, yes, I could ruin this friendship. I could ruin this relationship. But I think that's where we trust not the relationship. We trust God. We trust that God has ordained relationships, and they go through certain cycles, and they are to achieve certain purposes in our lives and other people's lives, and that he is safeguarding us in them, and he's safeguarding the relationship in its own way. You know, we participate in that, and it doesn't mean that every relationship ends up rosy, But even in the heartbreak, he is sovereign and he is healing and he is teaching and he is guiding. And so it is, I mean, relationships and friendships can be the most devastating work you ever do. But it is a work that we are called to. And it's a work that I think is essential to our humanity. You know, when God created us in his image, he created us male and female. And it's not just about gender roles. That's about the fact that the human beings could not live as human beings without another human being. That part of Adam was incomplete until Eve came along. And so there is this inbuilt sense that as humans, we must be in relationship with each other. As devastating as that can be, God has made us for the work of community. Mm-hmm. And he preserves us through that good work.
Yes, yes. Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts on discernment for the positive. Because one thing I find is that one of my greatest joys in the church is getting to encourage other women to say, hey, I see something in you. God is using you. Keep going. Keep persevering. And a lot of times I find that women say, I would never have known that about myself, but you said it out loud and it made me realize, God has, he has gifted me. He is using me. And so I would love to hear from you, especially with all the work you've done with this book, how can we develop discernment, not just for what's bad, but for what's good? And how can we call that out in one another?
Right. So one of the fundamental things I'm trying to turn on its head with this book is that discernment is essentially a positive thing. It is learning what goodness looks like so that you recognize it whenever you see it. So when Paul calls believers to be seeking whatever is true and lovely and pure and just, he's not telling them to stay away from the opposite. So he doesn't say, stay away from anything that's unjust. But the assumption is, if you find goodness, you will automatically know what isn't good. So you're taking a positive approach. And what I think that does is it frees us to see the goodness that is just overflowing in this world. And to have eyes that begin to spot it everywhere, even in our relationship with other people. So if I'm looking to find justice in the world, and I'm looking to see where God is righteous and how the world reflects that, and I'm looking for things and people who are pursuing justice. If I have a friend who seems to have a particular passion for, some kind of social work in the world, because I'm looking for justice, I'm also going to see it in her life. It's just going to be this big light bulb going off. Because I was looking for justice, I was able to value the work that she does that promotes justice. And if I wasn't looking or I didn't care for that category, she would keep working and I would never recognize what she's doing is valuable because I wasn't looking for it as a thing of value. Same thing with, like, if you have a friend or someone in your church who's really gifted artistically or creatively. And Paul says in Philippians 4 to be looking for things that are lovely, to be looking for things that are beautiful. And when I start looking for things that are beautiful and reflect that kind of loveliness, I'm going to see it in her work. And it's just going to pop out. And then I'm going to be able to honor that because my eyes have been changed to see what was of true value. And so that's part of discernment, is you're learning, you're having your sensibilities refined. It's, you know, it's interesting because we use the word discernment outside of the church. And we talk about a chef having a discerning palate, or we talk about a museum director who has an eye for art. And what we're talking about is a person who is so trained and is so experienced that when they taste something good, they know immediately that it's good and they can recognize and identify it. And that's what we're talking about with seeking goodness, even in each other's lives. If we have trained our palate to look for truth, to look for purity, to look for loveliness. When we see it being birthed through our friends and our church members and the people around us, we are going to have no other response except to celebrate it mm-hmm. and to rejoice in it.
So as you were thinking through what is good, what made you encouraged?
Oh, wow. The world is so full of goodness. I grew up in a faith tradition that had generally a negative view of the world around us. And for legitimate reasons, like the entire book of 1 John that talks about love not the world, right. Negative things of it.
Yeah.
And so there is this very legitimate category of suspicion for the world. Mm-hmm. But that was the overarching frame. That everything you should see everything with suspicion, and that even if something looks good, it could be tainted. So you just go through life very, very guarded and very worried about where am I going to misstep, and what if I accidentally take something bad into my life and I didn't even know it was bad?
Yeah. You know?
And so turning it this way, I've come to realize that God is a good God. And he has made a good world. And yes, it is marred by sin. And yes, we participate in that sin. But he is actively redeeming it. Mm-hmm. And there is so much goodness around us. And he has given that to us freely to enjoy. And, you know, part of the work of having the gospel work out in our lives is learning to have eyes that can see God's goodness. Because what we risk if we don't look and see and recognize and acknowledge the goodness that God has given, number one, we risk not taking it into our lives mm-hmm. and stunting our growth that way. But we also risk dismissing him. Like, if he is a good God that has made good things and we turn our nose up at it, what are we saying about his character? And what are we saying about our dependence on him and whether we think he can make anything of value? So I felt like I didn't want to take an idealistic approach that the world's all goodness and just you rush out into it naively. But I want people to know and be convinced that for all the brokenness, for all the heartbreak, for all the challenges, for all the pain that we endure, God is a good God, and he has given good gifts to his children, and he has given us through the Holy Spirit the ability to see and know his goodness in this life, in these moments, in this world.
That's so good. I could just sit and talk to you, not talk, just listen to everything you say. You're just such a great thinker. You are a smart person, and I love everything that you write and say, even on Twitter, everything you say, I'd like read it. And sometimes I don't understand what you're talking about, but it makes me think.
And here's the thing. It took me a long time to accept that as good.
It is good.
It took me a long time to receive that from God as a good thing, because I saw it as just a barrier to getting my housework done.
Is your mind always going?
It's always going. Yeah. Always. It doesn't stop. And when we were first married, my husband was like, why do you break the dishes so much? Why? Like I know everyone does this, but I had no excuse. I had no children. Like I'd put in loads of laundry and not remember them until like 2 days later. So I feel very impractical most of the time.
Oh, well.
And I appreciate God's good humor in giving me people in my life that can help me with all the practical things that I cannot accomplish.
Oh, well, speaking of calling out good, I see that as good in your life. You're serving the church. You're serving people well through this gift of that God has given you of being a thinker and being able to write in a way that makes us think. So keep going. And we're all going to run out and get your book. Can you tell us again the title?
Yes, it's All That's Good. Recovering the Lost Art of Discernment.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today and helping us think through these things.
Thank you, Christine. It's been great to be with you.
if you're enjoying these conversations, I would be so honored if you'd leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'd be even more honored if you would share By Faith with a friend who you think might enjoy joining in on these conversations. Also, remember that every Wednesday, the day after By Faith releases, I jump on Instagram stories to answer questions from the week's episode. What do you want to know or to talk about after listening to Hannah's wisdom? Find me on Instagram at ChristineHoover98 and let's chat. Join me next week as I talk with Jen Wilkin. Jen is a Bible teacher and an author, a wife and a mom of four. It was such a treat to talk to her about the mistakes that we often make in friendship. Meet me back here next Tuesday to listen in on our conversation. Until then, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.